to the Quantum Feedback Loop podcast. I'm your host, James Myers, and I also publish The Quantum Record, which is a free monthly journal of philosophy, science, technology, and time. In this episode, it was a pleasure to catch up with Lindsay House after she spoke with us nearly 2 years ago. Lindsay is an astronomer at the University of Texas at Austin who is researching dark energy, which is a force that causes the universe to expand, but is called dark because we can't see it directly with telescopes or other instruments. Comprising 70% of the mass of the universe, dark energy can only be detected by its effects on physical mass, and Lindsay has been leading 20,000 citizen scientists from 159 countries who are identifying galaxies with data from the world's third largest telescope. As Lindsay and other astronomers track the evolution of galaxies, many curious aspects of dark energy are emerging, including signs that it might not be exerting a constant force, as has long been thought. In our talk, Lindsay discusses some of the latest thinking about dark energy and the work of her citizen science project. How soon some of dark energy's biggest secrets might be uncovered is unknowable, but much has been discovered with powerful new technologies. I hope you enjoy learning from Lindsay as much as I did in this episode. Well, welcome back to the Quantum Feedback Loop, Lindsay. It's great to see you. I can't believe it's been almost 2 years since we've last discussed dark energy and your activities with it.
Yeah, agreed. I was thinking of back, but yeah, it's great to be back and to be chatting with you about dark energy and dark energy explorers.
Yeah, so tell us about Dark Energy Explorers, the citizen science project that you started, and just wondering what's been discovered so far, how far back in time you've looked, how many people have been involved, and whether there's been any kind of new unexpected findings from it.
So Dark Energy Explorers is a citizen science project that I launched in February of 2021. So we just had our fourth birthday. And it's a NASA Zooniverse citizen science or participatory science project. So we get the public involved in classifying galaxies. And so it's a part of a bigger dark energy experiment project at McDonald Observatory, the Hobby Eberle Telescope Dark Energy Experiment, which is helping to understand dark energy. And so essentially what Dark Energy Explorers is doing is helping us classify these galaxies that we're getting from this dark energy experiment because we're an unbiased survey. And so we need to label all of these astronomical objects that we're getting. But as far as your question about Dark Energy Explorers, it's been really awesome for the past 4 years. We have a community of about 20,000 people all around the world. They represent about 159 countries. And Zooniverse just recently launched a language translation. And so we have translated Dark Energy Explorers into 9 different languages now. And some of our team members have helped us because we have an amazing multilingual team, but some of our participants have also been really instrumental in wanting to have Dark Energy Explorers in their native language. So wow, that's really awesome.
That's really impressive. Yeah, that many countries and that many people with translation as well. That's really impressive. And so when they're classifying the galaxies, and understand the project was looking back, as you mentioned, I think before, was it 11 billion years back in time or 10 billion years back in time?
Yeah, exactly. About a range from 9 to 11 billion years.
9 to 11, yeah. And so as they're classifying these galaxies, what is it in particular that they're looking for and what you're looking for and what you've discovered so far?
So if you are on Dark Energy Explorers, you're looking at the actual spectra that we're getting from the third largest telescope in the world. And you're really trying to find the real galaxies. Right now, the question we're trying to answer is whether it's a real detection or it's maybe a bad detection or something we want to remove from our galaxy sample so that we can do our science with just the galaxies. And so they're looking at the real spectra, those real images of the galaxies. And it's been really awesome. Through Dark Energy Explorers, we've been able to label about 250,000 galaxies. And so we have this huge sample that we're really excited. HETDEX finished taking data after many years in the fall. And so we're working on some exciting cosmology results we hope to have soon.
Yeah, okay. And what are you doing with this data? How does it inform you about dark energy and dark energy's behavior? And I guess maybe we should talk about what dark energy is. I mean, we hear the term dark energy And the word makes us think that it's mysterious or maybe not so good, but it is, I think, something that's essential to the universe. And so maybe you could just explain at the same time as what you're doing with the data, what dark energy is and what it's telling you about dark energy.
Yeah, so it's a little confusing because all dark energy is this name that we've given to this thing that we really don't understand, right?
Yes.
And so it gets its name dark because it means we can't directly see it or we can't observe it, but we can observe how it's affecting other objects in our universe, like those galaxies that we're collecting. So with the HETDEX experiment, we're trying to create a map of the universe with these galaxies. So we can see how the galaxies are changing throughout cosmic time, to be able to really understand how those galaxies are expanding away from each other. And so that's where dark energy gets its last name, which is energy, because it's causing the universe to expand at an accelerated rate, which we think. And so those galaxies, we should see them in our map of the universe moving away from each other and really kind of changing the structure of the universe through cosmic time.
Right. Okay, so you're looking at these galaxies in terms of the effects that dark energy is having on them because you can't see dark energy directly. So is dark energy, is it right to think of it as a force that's kind of pushing physical matter around or distributing physical matter around, the opposite of dark matter, which is a force that's drawing physical matter together? Is that a good way of seeing both dark energy and dark matter?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's a great way to distinguish them, of dark energy pushing things apart while dark matter pulls things together. Although it's not necessarily like pushing it, it's more so creating more space, which is so hard for our brains to wrap our minds around. But it's almost as if you're just creating a bigger room and then things move into that room versus pushing things into the room, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's very helpful. Yeah, I didn't realize there was that distinction, but it does really make it more helpful to understand. It's kind of adding space in between the physical objects.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I gather, I mean, dark energy is, what is it, 70% of the mass of the universe? Or dark energy and dark matter together are 95% of the content of the universe, and we don't really know what it is. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what are the current reigning theories for what dark energy could be? I mean, I guess there's some theories that say it's a particle. If you could just go over maybe just a couple of the different ideas that are out there right now, and maybe what you think is the best.
I love this question. I think that we're in such an interesting time right now with cosmology and our understanding of the universe, especially with more and more data, with new surveys and telescopes launching. Right now, our most common model of the universe is, I think maybe you mentioned it, the Lambda CDM or the Lambda Cold Dark Matter model. And that really portrays dark energy as this constant. And so I think it's really interesting right now because a lot of our observations and our theoretical models are not aligning. And so it's a really interesting time to be like understanding exactly what's going on within dark energy and within cosmology. So I won't proclaim one theory or another, but I will say that I think within the next couple decades, if not really soon, we're going to have a lot more information about what dark energy really is.
And yeah, the Lambda CDM theory, I guess maybe we can talk about a little bit further on. But in terms of the reigning theories, you mentioned that there'd be some new information coming up with some new telescopes. So I guess makes me think of the James Webb Space Telescope, which launched a few years ago, the Vera Rubin Observatory, which I think is close to opening. Are those going to provide more information, or are there other sources coming online?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Vera Rubin Observatory and the LSST Legacy Survey of Space and Time are going to be really, really instrumental in helping us understand dark energy. That's one of the big pushes with the Vera Rubin. And I think they're scheduled to have their first light in July. So really, really soon. And yeah, it's gonna absolutely blow away the amount of data that we have had in previous experiments. So I think it's really gonna be instrumental in helping us make sense of this puzzle that we're trying to figure out. And that's why it's so important to have so many different surveys and so many different telescopes, because we have to come at it from so many different angles to understand something as large a scale as a picture of the universe or a dark energy that makes up, yet like you said, 70% of our universe. Yeah, we really use big, powerful instruments.
And so all of the data points that you've gathered from Dark Energy Explorers identifying these 250,000 galaxies approximately, I guess that would add to all of the new data that will come in from these new instruments. Is there anything that you've identified so far in Dark Energy Explorers that is new that you'd be looking for more information specifically on from the new instruments that are coming online?
Yeah, so one thing about Dark Energy Explorers and about PETDEX, the Dark Energy Experiment, the data that we use with Dark Energy Explorers, is we're using these galaxies. They're called Lyman Alpha emitting galaxies. And so those trace large scale structure, or something that we as astronomers call baryonic acoustic oscillations, which are these like really leftover imprints of the really early universe. And so that is one way, one cosmic probe to help us understand dark energy. And so we can use that technique, and that's what PETDEX is using. Vera Rubin Observatory, I believe, will also use that technique, but they'll also discover supernovae that act as standard candles. And so they can use a different technique to essentially understand the same thing. And so I think that's another reason, in addition to more data and new data, it's actually different techniques to help us understand the same thing. And so that we can actually have these cross checks, and make sure that all of our data and theories are really making sense all together.
Interesting. And so you mentioned supernovae. These are the explosions of these giant stars, much bigger than our sun, I gather, that when they run out of fuel, they collapse, and then there's this massive explosion and they blow all sorts of elements out into space with tremendous energy. And you mentioned standard candles, and my understanding of that is that certain types of supernovae have a particularly regular period under which, like a pulsing kind of period under which they emit energy. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's more so, yeah, how they're emitting light and how we can capture that big explosion throughout the universe. And we can use that. Yeah, we call them standard candles, that light throughout.
Okay. And so speaking of supernovae, I've read that researchers led by Professor David Wiltshire advance what's called a timescape model of dark energy, suggesting that it's dark energy that slows the effects of time at different rates in different regions. And maybe it's a view that says, as I understand it, that dark energy sits in the cosmic voids, like these void patches, and accounts for the expansion of space, which is what you had talked about earlier. I'm just wondering, do I have that kind of timescape model understood correctly? And how does that differ from other models that people are exploring for dark energy?
Yeah, I've heard of this one. So the timescape model, it really tries to consider the impact of the gravitational time dilation, where almost as if you had like a clock in low gravity, it would tick faster than those in like denser regions within the universe. I don't know as much about that one. I will let Professor David Wiltshire talk about that in definitive, but I know one thing for sure is that the theory is challenging that Lambda CDM model that we have been talking about, which really relies on dark energy to explain these supernovae measurements and this accelerated expansion. And so I think that is the big underlying we're seeing right now is a lot of our new discoveries and our new observations and our new theories are all really challenging this Lambda CDM model, and they're not quite aligning like we've believed them to align for many years.
And we've recently written in the Quantum Record about how it's been recently observed that the expansion of the universe is actually slowing. So I guess it was in 1998 that it was discovered that the universe was not just expanding, but the expansion was accelerating. And now there's this anomalous evidence that shows that the acceleration is decreasing. And I think there's some discussion that dark energy might be contributing to that change, which, again, I guess, as you said, would challenge the Lambda CDM model that there's this constant rate of acceleration.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think I remember reading that as well. So that was from DESI, a different dark energy survey. And so they've had some really awesome, interesting results too. That I think I also remember reading that they're really excited about these results and they're taking more and more data and they're going to continue to get a more robust statement. But I also think that the issue with a lot of these big experiments is that. Which is a really frustrating answer. I understand, but is that we have these huge error bars to be able to take a picture of something as large as the universe. We can't get this really perfect, satisfying answer that everyone really wants of what exactly it is. And so I think with all of these experiments and with DESI, we do have these discrepancies of like these different methods and the ways to analyze these different results. And that's why we're attacking it from so many different angles. But I know that they have a lot of really awesome, exciting results that are coming out that we should also talk about.
And yeah, DESI, as you mentioned, that's the telescope, and it takes 5,000 simultaneous images of galactic objects every 20 minutes. So it's a tremendous amount of data, I guess. Yeah, I understand they looked at the expansion of 15 million galaxies and observed the slowing. But maybe just tell us what some of the signatures of dark energy are when you're looking for signs that it's adding space, which moves physical objects around. What kind of signatures are you looking for? And how do you make sure, you mentioned that you're checking to make sure that it's not caused by some other thing. Tell us a little bit about that process of what you do to ensure that you're looking at dark energy and not something else. And is machine learning involved with that and other technologies?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so essentially what we are doing to help us understand what we're exactly looking for the dark energy is whenever we create that map of the universe or we collect all of these galaxies together, the Lyman alpha emitting galaxies, we're going to see where their structure lies and essentially how it's evolving through time. And so that was one of the big results from DESI that really, again, challenged that Lambda CDM model is that their observations showed that rather than a constant, dark energy might be evolving over time. So it might be changing as we progress through the history of the universe. And so that's essentially what we're looking for is how those galaxies are changing and moving throughout time.
Right. Okay. And that's why you're looking back over a period of time, I guess, to look at those signatures over that period of time. So, how is technology helping in this? Is it machine learning or is it other things that are helping to filter out other causes or are there other possible causes?
Yeah, so machine learning is playing a huge role, and I think AI in this next generation of astronomy and science in general is going to be so huge. And I think a lot of the discoveries that we're making. And so, yeah, we are using machine learning within HeadDex. So, that has been a big part of using machine learning with dark energy explorers. And so, what we essentially do is that we built this pipeline of the public classifying these galaxies, and then we can use those labels of those 250,000 galaxies from the public to be able to train our machine learning and to be able to actually interpret the outputs of the machine learning. And so I think yeah, we're only going to get more data, and that's what we need to understand dark energy, especially, and a lot of our other huge questions that we have in astronomy. And so the data sets are only going to continue to get bigger and bigger. And I think we're going to be forced to use machine learning and AI, but That's what I love about citizen science and participatory science is that we're keeping the humans in the loop and we're keeping that check on a lot of the awesome science that we're doing. And so, yeah, it's going to be really instrumental in the future.
Yeah, that's great. And I understand. I mean, I think it still holds that humans are better at identifying patterns, I guess, than machines, or at least it's a lot harder to get machines to identify patterns than it is to get humans. And maybe that's one of the key advantages of a citizen science project like Dark Energy Explorers, is that you're getting that human experience of pattern seeing.
Yeah, completely, completely. And I
And
think it really depends on the question. I think there are some more simple questions that maybe a machine would be better at, but I do think that there are still some questions that the human eye can be really quickly adjusted to. So yeah, I think it's really important to continue to have this human in the loop hold for the next generation of AI.
how long will Dark Energy Explorers go on for? Is there a timeline for it? Has it been determined, or is it indefinite?
That is a great question. Unfortunately, it's not indefinite, but we don't have a solidified timeline for when it will end. Like I mentioned, the dark energy experiment actually wrapped up last fall, and so it has stopped taking data, but we still have a lot of data if we want to go through the whole catalog with dark energy explorers. So I'm hoping it will last for, a couple years or so. But if we get a ton more participants and they classify all our data, I'm not going to be complaining either because that's great for us.
And I should just, I guess, for the benefit of listeners, you've mentioned HETDEX a few times. Tell us about what the acronym means and how it relates to the data that you're getting.
So HETDEX stands for the Hobby-Eberle Telescope Dark Energy Experiment. And yeah, it's this large dark energy experiment located out at McDonald Observatory in West Texas. And it is the telescope that's collecting the spectra of all of these galaxies, and specifically those Lyman Alpha emitting galaxies.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's a unique survey because it's unbiased, which really means we point the telescope up at the sky and we collect as much data as possible rather than pointing at specific targets, which a lot of other surveys do. And so that's where the real value in the machine learning and the dark energy explorers combination comes in because we are forced to need those labels or else we wouldn't understand any of the objects that we're collecting from this telescope.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. And you mentioned the McDonald Observatory earlier on. And when you mentioned spectra and Lyman Alpha, those, if I'm understanding correctly, those are references to energy wavelengths or types of energy.
Yeah, so Lyman Alpha emitters is essentially a hydrogen transition line, energy transition that we are able to capture, that those galaxies that light is emitting off, and that is what we're able to capture in our telescope.
Okay, all right. I wonder too, just in terms of, and I think you mentioned the cosmological constant a little bit earlier, and maybe just if we could talk a little bit about that, as it may or may not relate to the Lambda CDM theory. And I guess, the history of the cosmological constant, which Einstein, I think, referred to as his biggest blunder. And I guess he originally thought that there was no expansionary force in the universe, that the universe was static, and he put in a cosmological constant, if I understand it correctly, that would sort of offset the expanding energy and keep the universe at a static level. And then it was discovered in 19, what was it, 1932 by Edwin Hubble, that the universe is actually expanding, and then in 1998 that it's actually accelerating. So I understand that Einstein took out the cosmological constant from his equations, then he added it back. And then more recently, since 1998, it's been defined not as a, it's still called a cosmological constant, but it's defined as as a variable, I guess now, not a constant. Do I have that correct? And what is, how does that relate to dark energy?
These are all great questions. So the cosmological constant, like you mentioned, was originally introduced by Einstein to help essentially make his equations of general relativity make sense. It prevented the universe from collapsing under its own gravity without that cosmological constant. And so, he thought he added it back in, and now it's the leading candidate for explaining what dark energy is. But like I mentioned, that cosmological constant plays this really important role in how we understand our model of cosmology. And so essentially those equations are our theoretical models. And what we're gathering with the data from all of our telescopes, those are our observational models, right? And we have this huge, like we call it a cosmological constant problem. And that's this discrepancy between our observations of the telescopes and the value of the cosmological constants that we get from those observations and the actual theoretical value predicted by these equations from quantum field theory and Einstein's equations of general relativity. And so it's really it's a really mysterious time, and it's a really interesting time to be trying to understand all of these different pieces because we're getting some different things from what we actually observe versus what is we're trying to make sense of how we know what the universe is like today and how the math can kind of track out with all of our theoretical models.
Interesting. And so what branches of science are coming in to resolving this problem or this discrepancy, I guess, between the theoretical equations and what the actual observations are? I mean, obviously there's astronomy, I guess, which is your field. What other areas of science are looking at this discrepancy or trying to sort it out?
I mean, I still think of it differently, but I mean, physics is a huge one. We're talking about all of these different equations, but math is also playing a huge part. I think, like we mentioned before, data science and AI are going to be huge, and I think that is one of the big things that we're maybe missing right now in science is all of them trying to work together more. And I think that in the similar ways of how all of these dark energy experiments are using different techniques and we're taking different data and we're all having these different approaches, it's great for helping us to understand all of these different theories. But I also think that it's for us to understand something as large and as big of a picture like this, we really need a lot of interdisciplinary work, and we really need a lot of, collaboration along all of these different axes to really be able to have the best results. That's what's been so exciting and why I've loved my PhD project so far is that it really has sat at this interdisciplinary work of working with all of the scientists in AI and machine learning, but also physics and math and astronomy, and then also education and the public and being able to get everyone involved.
And does any of your research involve directly any work resolving this discrepancy, or is the data you're generating helping to contribute to that, but maybe you're not directly involved in resolving that discrepancy?
So HETDEX is, and as a part of HETDEX, the public's labels for all of these galaxies are helping to create this clean, pure sample of galaxies that then we will do the cosmological calculations on. And so, it's directly involved in what will be able to add to understanding, proving or disproving some of Desi's results of constant or evolving dark energy. Specifically, we have some redshift overlaps. So some of where we're taking data with Desi, Het Dex will be able to essentially add more data points onto their plot to be able to say, okay, we have more evidence for evolving dark energy, or we have contradicting evidence for what we thought was true was a constant dark energy. So we're hoping in the coming months that those results and papers will be coming out really soon with Het Dex, and we'll be able to have this complementary understanding with these other big dark energy experiments of what we're actually seeing.
And you mentioned redshift overlap. So redshift is the as galaxies move further away, the light that we get from them becomes increasingly red as the wavelengths get stretched out. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And what does the overlap say? What problems does overlap cause?
You mean like the overlapping data points that? Yeah.
Or is that a good thing?
It's a great thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Essentially, we're not collecting the same galaxies per se, but we're studying the same era of cosmic time. And so we're able to compare where our results of that section of looking back in time versus their results of the same time period. And then, hopefully we get similar results. And if not, we might have some more problems, but it's also really exciting because we're starting to understand this full picture of dark energy.
Okay, so you'll have a base to compare, I guess, different sets of data, which is yeah. And so when you're and I don't think we talked about this last time, but when you're looking out 9 to 11 billion years in that time band, when it's thought that the universe is what I think 13.8 billion years old, is there something particular about that time band that is interesting, or is it a case of others are looking at different time bands and that's the band that you've chosen to look at, or is there something specific that you're expecting within the 9 to 11 billion year time band and the light energy that you're seeing from that?
Yeah, so that it's part of how Het Dex was designed. But yeah, exactly. That's how we're collecting those Lyman alpha emitting galaxies, which are really great tracers of large scale structure to be able to understand those baryonic acoustic oscillations, which allow us to see the early universe. And so yeah, it's really specific to how the experiment was designed. But exactly like you're saying, we want to have some overlap, but we want to have a full picture. So there's a certain redshift ranges or eras of the universe that we're studying. And then DESI has some more, and other programs like UKID or W1, they're also studying different time periods with different techniques. And so it's really just how the survey was designed so that we can better understand like this full picture.
And then I guess all the data is put together, and then you can look for the common links, I guess, between different time periods and different observations.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's many questions about dark energy, and we've touched on a number of them here. And as the word dark implies, there's a lot of questions. And in terms of, what you think might be the first big question to be resolved, whether it's tomorrow or next year or 5 years down the road, is there something that you're seeing on the horizon that could be sort of the first big clue to be resolved about dark energy?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I think the biggest one right now is whether it's constant or it's evolving. I think, before a few years ago, we were pretty set on, okay, constant dark energy. We're all going to use lambda CDM. This is our model of the universe. And but that's what science is all about. It's about asking questions and challenging these theories and assumptions that we've had for so long. And so I think that is the huge question right now of whether it's constant or evolving. And I think that those are the big results that we're gonna see really soon, I think, is whether we're gonna have more evidence for this constant or evolving dark energy, which is really exciting.
And if it is evolving, maybe as you know, these observations I mentioned of the universe's expansion slowing, indicating maybe some evolution, is there any theories as to what would be causing the evolution? I mean, it could be random, would it?
Yeah, I don't think I would go as far for it to say it would be random, but I think we have no idea. We're not quite there yet. Yeah, and to be able to even understand this small piece of the puzzle, I think that's the next generation of science questions for sure.
Yeah, I guess yeah, if it's observed that it's evolving, or if it's generally agreed that it's evolving, I guess then the next question would be what's causing the evolution? Yeah. So when we first met almost 2 years ago, we spoke about the important contributions that citizen science makes to research, like the Dark Energy Explorers project that you've been managing, and how citizens help to unravel some of the universe's mysteries. And you know, you mentioned the 250,000 galaxies that have been labeled, which is fantastic. And so, as a busy PhD researcher, you take time to serve on the executive committee for the American Physical Society's Forum on Engaging the Public. And I wonder if you could just talk about what the committee does to engage the public with science and why that's important to you, maybe not just in your research, but also in other respects.
Well, I actually just defended my PhD last week, so no longer a PhD student researcher, which is exciting. So the American Physical Society, they have an executive committee on informing the public, and essentially what they do is they try to make a lot of essentially increasing access for the public to engage with physics and to engage with astronomy. And so a lot of what I have been involved in is really being able to uplift a lot of these STEM researchers that are doing a lot of outreach and public engagement, but they're not getting a lot of the recognition or the proper training. So, developing some science communication training, APS, with part of the committee, I was able to participate in some science advocacy to Congress. So, they're involved in a lot of that as well. I think one it should be coming out relatively shortly as well. It is a white paper that the committee put together on how public engagement is really core to physics and really urging a lot of our institutes and institute leaders to take public engagement into consideration whenever you're going through a promotion process or you're reviewing a tenure case. Because we're really at this fork in the road in terms of public understanding of science and developing critical thinkers, and we really need to reward that for a lot of people in the field. Because I think right now it's sometimes seen as just something extra. As I mentioned, I just graduated or defended my PhD, and actually, I think that's one of the powers of citizen science is that it's actually in this feedback loop of being able to actually inform the science. And so the work that you put in with the public is directly correlating to the more robust results that you're going to get from your science. And so, yeah, it's really important to me because I think, yeah, I think especially astronomy is this really unique science that I think can challenge a lot of your worldviews if you've never seen the Pale Blue Dot speech or the Pale Blue Dot video of being able to look back and see Earth and to be able to really reflect on your place in the universe and the space you take up here on Earth and what that impact has. So I think really more so science education as like a social justice issue and as a human right to be able to understand your place in the universe is a lot of what I care about and how I try to push that through my work and through the committees that I sit on.
Yeah, social justice and human rights, that's an interesting way of putting it, especially in times like now where science funding is under threat. It's treated as maybe not as important as other maybe more urgent needs, and yet some fantastic things come out of it. So in terms of engaging citizens with science, which is something that we at the Quantum Record and on the Quantum Feedback Loop podcast, I mean, that's our goal, is to make sure that people understand or engage with science, especially when there's so many complexities now. Like it's fantastically complex, and there's many branches of science, and they're all looking at things from a different perspective. And it's especially important, I think, to be able to explain this to people and what the relevance is to their daily lives, either now or sometime in the distant future. In terms of what you've seen as people engage with Dark Energy Explorers, you mentioned there's 20,000 people from 159 countries. Have any of them become particularly engaged? Have any of them really stood out in terms of what they've been able to contribute?
Yeah, absolutely. We have some absolute rock star volunteers that are so dedicated
Wow.
to our project, which has been awesome. They've done, thousands of classifications on their own and even helped us. One particular is Nathan Bell. He's been incredibly helpful in our project and helping monitor some of the talk in the chat because, yeah, I think one of the most effective things is, it's really easy to see 20,000 people all over the world and have all of these numbers. But we've tried to do a lot of public engagement that makes them not only feel a part of the project because they're classifying the actual data, but, hosting some Zoom nights where we give them tours of the telescopes, or we had a sticker competition to determine our logo. And so that's how we did our logo was soliciting drawings and designs from our participants. And so that has been a lot of fun and just some of the ways that we've been able to engage as a full group. But most recently, like I mentioned, a lot of our participants have reached out to want Dark Energy Explorers in their native language and have helped translating the entire project into their native language. And so that has been really awesome that they're that excited that they want to translate it and then be able to share it with others. And so that has been really cool. And so yeah, we have some really dedicated participants. It's awesome.
That's fantastic. And in terms of, the kind of participation that you're seeing across different areas of the world, is there any notable differences or interesting things that you're seeing, for example, from your American participants versus your participants from Africa? Or are you seeing any interesting differences in terms of the way people approach the questions?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. No, we haven't, although that's not something that I've looked into a ton, but yeah, we should to see because that's a great idea in terms of just making sure we're listening to our audience and to our participants and making sure that the project is serving what they need and want.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's great that you're involving people and that people can actually make real contributions to science, because I think and it's empowering, I think, to people to think that that can be done. And I guess in terms of history, I look at citizen scientists like Pierre de Fermat, who was a lawyer, in what, the 1700s, and Srinivasa Ramanujan in the early 1900s. These people who didn't have any necessarily scientific training, but contributed amazing things to mathematics and other areas of science. And so it'd be really interesting to see if some of these dark energy questions are solved by citizen scientists. What do you think? Do you think there's a possibility?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all of our 20,000 of our participants are already on their way to helping us understand what our results are with HETDEX. They have been truly instrumental in the project being able to be as run as well as it has, and so that's really exciting. And yeah, I think there's so many other amazing citizen science projects out there too, and I think with, like I mentioned, the Vera Rubin telescope, there's going to be so many more citizen science and participatory science projects that are launching really soon, with a lot of different objects answering some really cool questions. But you did mention the empowerment piece, and I think that is really important too, in terms of that's a special interest of mine in terms of the project and having things at museums. So yeah, we've tried to incorporate Dark Energy Explorers in some museums, and we're in the Texas Natural History Museum here in Austin, and we created an exhibit out in McDonald Observatory. So when people come visit the telescope and they see the third largest telescope in the world, then they can go to the exhibit and they can actually like swipe on Dark Energy Explorers and already directly be involved in the project and see the data and really try and connect this like empowering feeling of seeing this huge feat of engineering and like looking back in time and space and then being able to directly participate in the project. I think is another one of those things that means a lot to me in terms of the empowerment of creating someone's like STEM identity.
Yeah, that's amazing, and especially for young people who maybe not have not yet decided on what they want to do after high school. I guess seeing these things really opens up a whole new world for them.
Yeah, exactly. I think yeah, everyone loves space when they're a kid, and then they get older and they realize they have to do some math and physics, and they get lost. And so I think bringing that back and being able to yeah, just empower people that that they can do this and stick with it, and it is still just as exciting as it is whenever you're a kid.
And do you track or keep data on how many youth are participating in Dark Energy Explorers out of the 20,000, or is that something that you can't determine?
No, we don't. So as part of Zooniverse, they don't collect demographics like that. But we do advertise. I mean, I've been to like eighth grade classrooms, high school students. We do have a whole suite of materials for educators with worksheets and lecture tutorials that we've developed to go alongside the projects that are published in McDonald Observatory's teachers' guides. And so we have all of these resources and videos that we can send to educators, and a lot of the professors here at UT Austin use them in their classroom because that was a big part of building Dark Energy Explorers, is really wanting a low barrier to entry where you could participate pretty young and really easily and not have to have that much information. But if you want to go dive deep, we'll give you all the resources to understand all of those baryon acoustic oscillations and theories of dark energy, and you could apply it to eighth grade classroom or like a upper level graduate class.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's so good and encouraging to hear that what you're doing relates as much to youth as it does to people who have a lot more experience, I guess. And I guess, I mean, I grew up in the era before the internet, so I didn't have access to any of this sort of information. So it's great to hear that youth are being motivated and involved in the process too, with the teaching materials that you mentioned and the outreach that you're doing.
Yeah, they're our next generation of scientists. So if we're gonna keep building these telescopes and want to try to understand what dark energy is, we hope to continue to have amazing scientists with us.
Yeah, well, that's great, and we look forward to hearing more about dark energy from you. It's our conversation might just be ending for now, but it will go on because the mysteries continue, and so hopefully we'll have a chance to speak again, and hopefully there'll be some interesting new data, even more interesting new data than what's already been discovered. And so I would really look forward to our next discussion on it. And in the meantime, I want to congratulate you on finishing your thesis defense, and I guess we'll soon be calling you Dr. Lindsay House.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I have a feeling that the next time we talk, we will have some interesting results to talk about. So
Yeah,
yeah, I'll look forward to it.
I look forward to that as well. So I thank you for your time today, and it's been a really interesting discussion about dark energy, and I hope that people, with questions can send us the questions, and we'll incorporate them in our next discussion. So thank you, Lindsay, for your time. Very, very great talking to you again.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks so much. It was great to be here.
Okay, thank you. Our thanks go to today's guest and to you for listening to the Quantum Feedback Loop. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to check out The Quantum Record at thequantumrecord.com. The Quantum Record is a monthly journal of philosophy, science, technology, and time, where you'll find the latest developments in our rapidly evolving technological world.